Welcome to Fantai, everybody, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm the wonderful Travell Anderson.
And I am your favorite politics and pop culture journalist, Jared Hill. Coming up on the show today, we are talking about someone that we've actually kind of teased around talking about. We actually, when we were testing the show, we did an episode about him. We were talking about RuPaul Andre Charles, better known as RuPaul.
But first, we have our dishonorable mentions for the week. This is our opportunity to call out or highlight those stories that deserve a little bit of attention, either for their good or for their stupid. Jared, what do you have for us this week?
First things first, I'm going to give a dishonorable mention to allergy season. A full-throated fuck you to allergy season. The thing for me is I have actually never had seasonal allergies before, and I think this is my first year experiencing them, where I'm waking up sneezing, my nose is runny, literally right now, my eyes are watery. Like, I don't know that it's seasonal allergies, but I feel like it has to be seasonal allergies, so fuck you to all of the seasonal allergies out there that are seemingly messing with me right now.
We got to get you some, what they call it, Allegra.
I have the Zyrtec, and it seems like it's working sometimes. But again, I'm not exactly sure if it's allergies or not. So it's a difficult situation.
Gotcha. Well, that was cute. My first honorable mention is actually going to be a dishonorable mention. And it goes to ESPN and their problematic infographics during the draft that they just had. Now, I know I know it's interesting that I'm coming up with something sports related, you all.
Indeed.
But, you know, the internet's brought it to my attention. And I was like, oh, this would be cute for me to mention because, you know, it's against type. Anyway, so as you all know, the NFL had its draft digitally this year. And apparently they do these infographics. Every time somebody gets drafted, they have these infographics that inform you a little bit about the person who just got selected, you know, by the particular team. And when the Cincinnati Bengals used their first pick in the second round of the NFL draft, I don't know what that means, they chose wide receiver T. Higgins out of Clemson. Shout out to South Carolina. But they used these infographics to display and contextualize some of the folks' life, like I said. And on Mr. Higgins's, they told the whole world that his mother fought drug addiction for 16 years.
What?
And, you know, I think we all are just trying to be like, okay, like, why is that relevant?
Why does that even matter?
Even if his mother is, you know, public about her struggles, public about, you know, what she went through, why is you telling that to the whole world? Because I didn't know about it before you just told me about it.
What does that have to do with, right, what does that have to do with him becoming an NFL player? Like, I don't even understand that.
Now, we should say, you know, he did respond to it on Twitter, and he was like, you know what, I'm proud of my mama. And, you know, he kind of took that approach to it. I'm tired of my mama and, you know, what she had to go through to, like, care for us. But it's definitely something that just wasn't necessary. ESPN did apologize for it, but it's one of those situations where it was like, that should have never made it to the air, and it at least went through at least one editor's eyeballs, if not more than one round of editor's eyeballs, and y'all still did it? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, ESPN can kiss my ass.
Well, I'm sure that's not the first time we've had that discussion. What else do you have?
I also have a dishonorable mention. Maybe it's an honorable mention. All of it's about Lando Lakes. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Lando Lakes, it's the butter.
I know who Lando Lakes is. What's happening? Please don't tell me I have to stop.
So, you know, historically, Lando Lakes, their logo, it was like a landscape, and then they had a Native American character.
Oh, no.
So recently, Lando Lakes finally removed the Native character off of it. But now you have all of these, you know, I'm going to say it, white folks who are like protesting Lando Lakes, and they're like tweeting about how they're no longer going to buy Lando Lakes butter and how the Kroger brand is better. So they're just going to go with that because they took off, you know, this character who probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. Because a lot of people, right, don't even notice that the character is gone.
So wait, are the Native people upset that it's gone, or was it gone? I'm confused.
No. White people, some white people are mad that it's gone. Native folks, generally speaking, have been campaigning to have
to get it removed. Okay.
For the long, in the same way they've been campaigning for, like, what's the sports team, Redskins?
The Redskins, yeah.
Y'all, two sports references from me in one episode. I mean, oh, y'all been, listen.
Y'all better mark the damn calendar.
I am in rare form today, y'all. Okay.
Okay. So, good for that. So I have a diss / honorable mention. Yes. I want to give a shout out to Sarah, who was playing Jeopardy, who was asked about a Zulu leader. And this is exactly what it sounded like.
Here, as on each September 24th, Zulus celebrate a holiday that was named in honor of this warrior leader of the early 1800s. Sarah.
Who is Shaka Khan?
No. Matt. Who is Shaka Zulu?
For those of you that haven't seen it, Sarah obviously chose Shaka Khan instead of Shaka Zulu. What's hilarious about it are so many things. Number one, the fact that she even fucking said that, right? But number two, her reaction after they say that she's wrong. But then there's this sliver of a moment where you see Alex Trebek's face. I am clear that Alex was not being shady, but in the spirit of the shady bitch in me, I see it as shady, and it's hysterical. I'll make sure that we retweet it so you can go to @FantiPodcast and see the video. It is ridiculous, and white people, y'all need to go get your girl, because what the hell was that? And then what was your last one?
My last one this week, I just want to shout out all of the, quote, content creators, end quote, who are out here, who are rising to the occasion and, like, putting out things, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be, you know, these IG Live, your story time or interview series that folks are doing. I want to give a particular shout out to Terrell, the Terrell Show on YouTube, as well as Zachary Campbell, also on YouTube, two black gay men who've been in this, you know, influencer
Terrell
game.
Is Terrell. Grace?
Yes, Terrell Grace.
Yes, okay.
And they've been in this YouTube game for a minute, and I just love to see how their channels are, like, adapting to this moment and still being able to provide, you know, content for people to check out to, like, you know, just, what's the word? Escape, there we go, from the foolishness that's going on in the world. So shout out to those two and any content creator that's out here doing it because, you know, I'm struggling. And, you know, we'll have a conversation at a different time about this, the title of content creator and why I got issues with it.
Thanks.
But shout out to all the folks that are, you know, rising to the occasion and making it happen. What about you? What's your last one?
A reminder just before I go on to mine, though, and I think I said this on last week's show, but, like, again, I want everybody to remember that in this time when we were all locked in the house, that the people that we turned to were artists and journalists and Amen. All of the people that we've deemed essential workers in the various different industries that fall under that. So the last thing I want to do is shout out to everybody that's out there having a difficult time right now in the quarantine. This past week, Travell, you know, it's really started to become difficult for me. And I don't know if it's like a long-term thing or if it's just a wave, but it has been a really difficult last week for me. And I know that the depression is starting to really show its ugly ass. And for everyone out there that is figuring out how to get through this, whether you're at home by yourself or with a big family or somewhere in between, if you are in a city by yourself or with, you know, all of the people that you know, whatever your situation is, like, just shout out to everyone that's having a difficult time trying to figure out how to get through COVID-19, because so many of us are having a really hard time, and I am definitely in the ranks with you. And I know 15 minutes before we got on the computer to start doing the show, I was texting someone like, I'm going to have to pull it together to go do a show. And I've been binging The Good Wife and Scandal. Excuse me, The Good Fight and Scandal. And just being able to escape, if you will, into that. So shout out to those artists as well.
Shout out to Olivia Pope's Lip Quiver.
Listen, and to the hair, to the whole situation, I have decided that I want to grow up to be a combination of Diane Lockhart and in The Good Fight and Olivia Pope. Like, it's just so fucking good. All right, coming up, we're going to dive into the supermodel of the world and the person who always has the good questions. Drag Race's own RuPaul Andre Charles gets the fancy treatment after this quick break. Don't go anywhere.
Alrighty, everyone. We've told you for a couple weeks now about these Raycon earbuds, but we're here to tell you about them once more. I already told you, one of the things I love about the Raycon earbuds is that they pop right on in your ear. You know, I got small ears, and so they come adjustable.
You have the smallest ears of any person I've ever met in my life. All right, which
you're
is
triggering
crazy.
Me right now.
Sorry. Well, I mean, if it makes you feel any better, when I was a kid, I had enormous, like, Will Smith ears. Will
Did
Smith,
they call
Barack
you
Obama ears. No, the girl down the street who spoke Spanish always called me Elefante. So I was upset about that. But they fit in your ears, your little tiny ears, and my, you know, full-size human ears. They fit in
Not
mine as well.
Full-size human ears.
But what's cool about it is when you open up the package, there's like this card that has all of these different size little pieces that will help you to fit into your ear. Did you use a tinier one than what came with it?
I did. I went all the way to the smallest one.
No way.
And it fits perfectly.
It's like a child. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to fight you. But it's a perfect fit into my ears. And one of the best parts of it is that it will cancel out all of the noise. So you don't have to hear your, you know, new neighbors upstairs from you doing their workouts, you know, in the middle of the night. You don't have to worry about, you know, the essential workers that are outside your apartment cutting grass. You can pop in your earbuds and you can hear exactly what you want to hear. You can hear this podcast very well.
The newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are stylish and discreet and offer 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-canceling fit. The company was co-founded by Ray J and by celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Cardi B, Melissa Etheridge, Brandy. They all love their Raycons, so you can pick up a pair and see what all the hype is about. And now is the best time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/fanti. That's buyraycon.com/fanti for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. That's buyraycon.com/fanti.
Start your engines and may the best woman with an X win.
Oh, Jesus Christ, we I'm so tired.
We are getting into our fanti this week, and if you don't know where that little bit that I just said is from, it is from the one and only RuPaul's Drag Race. If you're even somewhat paying attention to pop culture, you've come across the impact of this drag queen, RuPaul. Whether that's because you actually watch Drag Race or because you watch SNL and have seen some of the drag related lip syncing sketches that they've done, you can thank RuPaul for all of that and for leading the mainstreaming of drag. But of course, with this increased attention on RuPaul has come some controversy. You know, is RuPaul transphobic? Maybe RuPaul's a fracker. Does he really care about the community? The jury is still in deliberations. And so we're going to dive into that. But before we get into kind of the complexities of RuPaul, Jarrett, talk to us a little bit about like what your relationship is to RuPaul, if you have one.
So when I was thinking about this, it's a weird coincidence, I guess, not really ironic. But my first memories of RuPaul were actually on VH1. RuPaul had a talk show called The RuPaul Show. It ran from 1996 to 1998. Apparently not that successful, but it was.
I wonder why.
It was the first time I'd ever just seen RuPaul and was like, what exactly is happening? And who is this gorgeous person? And like was just so intrigued by it. If this was 1996 to 1998, I was between 6th and 8th grade and just kind of like amazed by whoever this person was that was so funny and witty. And then I remember in college, Rue had this song called Looking Good, Feeling Gorgeous, which is the clip that we played a few moments ago. And I remember in college, like us just thinking the song was so cute, but so funny as well. And just like the aggressive way that she asks the question, how do I look? Like, it's hilarious. And so, and then Drag Race came along. And I know for myself, I've always appreciated RuPaul for being such a specifically unique talent. Aside from like, you know, the drag and being gorgeous, there's a very unique wit and humor and timing that comes with RuPaul and with Drag Race. And as I've started to watch it again, I've been just really impressed at how witty they are and how funny they are and how good they are with their language, with puns and all that. So I've always had an appreciation for RuPaul dating back apparently to probably 6th grade. What about you?
You know, I don't know. So, you know, if for all of the listeners who don't know, Travell has a horrible memory. I don't remember nothing. And so I'm not quite sure exactly, like, what was my first kind of coming across of RuPaul. But I do remember, I mean, maybe it was like RuPaul has a small role in Tu Wong Fu. Maybe it was something like that in the movie Tu Wong Fu. But I do remember hearing the song, if you like me, you call the song Cover Girl, but it's really called Supermodel. Is the name of the song.
Supermodel.
Yes. You better work. Cover
Girl.
Yes. And so that was 1993. I was 2 years old, so I definitely didn't hear it, you know, when it initially came out.
Yeah.
And so that, but that's like the thing that's in my head that I'll be like, oh, I think I connected that to this individual. But then in terms of just like knowing who RuPaul was, for me, Logo TV was the cable channel that like I flocked to when I was like coming of age and coming into myself. And that's the channel that Drag Race was initially on. A lot of people don't notice. Drag Race was initially on Logo before it ever made its way to VH1 where it is now. And I've been like a fan of Drag Race, the show, since season one, since that season one filter with Bebe Zahara-Banet, Angina.
Bebe Zahara-Banet.
Listen, yes.
Honey, mother.
With
the
Acacia,
original.
All, yes. All of the girls that did that very first season of Drag Race don't get enough attention, but that's a story for another time. And I think that's because a lot of people just haven't seen, you know, those episodes. But I will say after Drag Race, I started just doing my own research and like delving into this person who we now know as RuPaul. And that's when I began to discover a lot about how RuPaul got his start. In terms of just being in entertainment and being visible, and a lot of that was like rooted in this like gender fuckery form of drag, where it was literally about, it was less about like female impersonation and more about just like pushing up against the ideas that we have about like what a man should wear and what a woman should wear and like mixing it all together. But, you know, I have to say that as time has gone on, as the show has continued to gain bigger and bigger audiences, as RuPaul's brand has continued to grow and grow from now having, you know, drag conventions both here in LA and in New York now, from the show has millions of, I shouldn't say millions, that's an exaggeration, but like all these different iterations in different, there's a UK version of the show, I believe there's a Thailand version of the show.
Which really speaks to like the initial inspiration for the show, because Ru has talked about the inspiration for the show coming from America's Next Top Model with
yes.
Tyra Banks. And like, you know, Top Model has gone around the world in a million different iterations, as you would say, and like has really grown it into this international brand, which is amazing.
Yeah, but as the brand kind of grew and drag kind of left the dark and dingy corners of the clubs, and now it's on national television, I just began to, like, pay attention to RuPaul a little bit more, pay attention to how they speak about different issues. And I think RuPaul is one of those perfect examples of, like, people who we kind of thrust a certain responsibility onto in terms of visibility and representation, even though that individual may or may not be the best, quote-unquote, person to have those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say all that to say, I now look at RuPaul in two different ways. I look at RuPaul Andre Charles, the man, and I look at RuPaul, the drag queen. And I think a lot of the confusion and a lot of the conflict that we have with RuPaul, it's actually a conflict with RuPaul Andre Charles speaking when people think that RuPaul, the drag queen, is speaking. And I think like the first situation that we should bring up is, you know, probably the most recent controversy, and that's like RuPaul maybe admitted to being a fracker.
Well, and because as we're going into there though, I think you touched on something, and we'll get on into it a little bit more. I think that there's this idea that being a member of community makes you an advocate for community. And
right.
That is not always true. And I think that RuPaul has been an advocate for our community in a lot of ways, but isn't always the best advocate because of some antiquated ideas, some throwback perspectives, if you will, that were, you know, kind of problematic for some people. So the more new one is definitely this piece that you're talking about with fracking. And so RuPaul was on an interview with Terry Gross on NPR's Fresh Air and kind of alluded to being a fracker. But didn't say it. This story comes from Vulture. It says, if you watch Drag Race or keep up with the RuPaul universe, then you know that RuPaul prioritizes getting said coin. But it goes on to say, what you won't learn from an episode of Drag Race is that RuPaul might be allowing companies to frack on his 60,000 acres in Wyoming, on a ranch that he owns there, where his husband lives full time. And I believe Ru lives in Los Angeles, and they kind of, you know, go back and forth. But the language that was used from Ru was talking about the land. And he says, well, a modern ranch, 21st century ranch, is really land management. It is, you lease the mineral rights to oil companies and you sell water to oil companies, and then you lease the grazing rights to different ranchers. So it's land management. People heard that as, it sounds like you're fracking on your land, which is a major environmental issue. And, you know, fracking is something that is really frowned upon by most people that are in the environmental movement or that are working on environmental justice. And there's been plenty of instances where fracking has been a really dangerous way to drill for oil. There's a lot of safety concerns around it. And so there was a bit of surprise coming from someone that was seen as so liberal or progressive with RuPaul that seemed to be making money off of fracking.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to admit and say it that I didn't really know what fracking was until this situation, until this, you know, the internet started going up in a roar about this particular interview. And, like, I had seen, like, people protesting fracking. I remember actually vividly when I was at the LA Times, we had to cover the Rose Bowl parade. And I remember tacked on at the end of the parade were these folks, you know, protesting fracking and all of that. But I never really knew what it was. But to kind of see activists and folks online kind of equate the language that RuPaul used in the interview with fracking, I'm like, oh, okay. But it's interesting because, you know, as people have noted, Terry Gross did not also cue in that was fracking, or maybe she did and she was like, I'm gonna mind my business and keep it rolling.
To that ain't what we here to talk about.
Exactly. Very that. Yes. But you know, this is one of the situations, like I said, I can't speak too much on the darn fracking because I don't know what the hell it is, but this is one of those kind of recent examples, I think, of RuPaul Andre Charles. I think this the person doing this interview was RuPaul Andre Charles. The person doing this interview was not RuPaul, right? Because there's a, I guess, what you would call like a dissociation, if you will, that seems to take place as he's talking about and literally, like, you know, admitting to the world, not only does he have 60,000 acres, which, like, I mean, I know they said they was going to give us 40 acres and a mule, but he was like, I want it all, honey. I want it all. I'm not sharing with nobody, honey.
Well, and it's in Wyoming. It's a little less expensive than it would be here in Los Angeles, right? And very so that. There is that part. The thing that happened, though, last year that really made us end up using RuPaul as one of the test cases for Fanti happened at the Emmys. And I remember watching at home and seeing RuPaul win the Emmy and go up on stage and thinking, like, wow, that's a few white folks, a few more white folks. Wow, is everybody on stage with RuPaul a white person? Like, what is the story here? And so Travelle, when he went backstage, he was asked a question by Danielle Young from Essence at the time. Kind of explain what the question was.
Yeah, so I actually was in the room, okay, and saw Danielle forming the question in her head. But basically, she asked this question about the lack of diversity in terms of the producing team that was on the stage with RuPaul. Here's what she asked.
Yes. Hey, girl. Hey, Ru. So I have a question for you about the hot button term diversity, because that always gets thrown around.
Yeah.
And here looking at your team, I don't see a lot of diversity. And I'm curious about how you feel that, especially someone who represents so strongly for the LGBT community.
And
about
the BLT community. The BLT.
But do you feel like it's important for that to be represented behind the scenes as well for a show like yours that's so diverse.
Well, first of all, most of our show is black, gay, and a drag queen. So check, check, and check. But now we're pretty diverse. Yes, there are lots of different types of people here. Is it important? Absolutely. You know, hey, you know, I grew up, I had to fight. I feel like I'm about to quote a movie right now.
All my life.
There you go. Yeah. No, you know, I it wasn't easy getting here. You know what I had to do.
Yeah. Work twice as hard.
And some of the things I'm not even going to repeat that I had to do. But I think we got it.
So as you can see, RuPaul is like, he
when
does
I say the tap dance,
listen,
honey, the body
the
roll,
and jiving, honey.
Listen,
okay?
Let's call it what it is.
He basically was like, you know, the host is black.
What was wild to me was the way that Rue really dodged the question and tried to like thwart the question in the middle of the question and like
very much
jump
so.
Back into it. You know what I mean? And like, I mean, you and I both interview people, right? You know when someone is trying to not answer your question, but it was very, it was a pretty stark illustration of that in that moment. And I know for myself, this brought me back to so many conversations that we have around diversity and inclusion. If you don't know, Travelle and I are president and vice president of the National Association of Black Journalists here in LA. And, you know, diversity and inclusion is the whole job, right? It's a lot of the work that we do. And so when I saw this, it really kind of triggered for me that we need to be really clear that diversity does not just mean bringing in white women, right? Diversity diversity does not just mean a white gay man, right? And I think that so many times that there is a conversation about diversity that really ends up translating to, oh, well, we brought in some white women. And like white women, you know, that is a bit of diversity, but like the spectrum of diversity is pretty wide. And I think that when companies or shows are looking to highlight their diversity, they tend to bring in white women or white gay men and say like, oh, well, we've got gays. And it's like, yeah, but do you know how many other different kinds of people diversity looks like and represent diversity? Even with Apple, I remember there being a black woman there who was doing diversity and inclusion and said something to the effect of, well, you can have diversity in a room full of white men, and people were like, sis, what? Like, right. You know what I mean? So it was a frustrating thing to kind of hear happen.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to say that, you know, in RuPaul's answer, he does mention at some point a woman by the name of Jacqueline Wilson, who was a black co-executive producer who had died prior to the Emmys, but she was a co-executive producer of the show. And then shortly after, you know, once people started, you know, sending Danielle's tweet all around, because she tweeted the video of it, they then Michelle Mills, who is a Latina producer on the show and who was actually present on the stage, but she was in the corner that night, she also tweeted about, you know, her participation on the show and playing a big role in all of that. So like, you know, there are other or were slash are other people there. But I think ultimately when it comes to this particular conversation, it was kind of one of those like, I have a black friend type of responses mm-hmm. that we hear from white people.
Or I guess I am the black friend in this
very,
instance.
Very that. And it was just, even in the room that night, it was a weird response. And I remember being like, ooh, this is not gonna be cute. I actually was out at that time and I was typing my team and I was like, y'all, I think I should write a story on this. And they were like, well, I don't know. Da-da-da-da-da. And so we didn't end up doing anything. And then literally the next morning, Danielle Young's video is like literally all over the place. But that was one of the moments for me that I was like, okay, Rue, you playing games and you're buying into, similar to your point about like white women being diversity. I think there's also this thing about white gay folk being mm-hmm. diversity too, because of their, you know, sexual orientation, and like how that approach just like ignores the way whiteness often kind of supersedes some of those other, you know, communities that people may belong to, right?
If this weren't in the last 5 years, we would have said it trumps whiteness. Exactly right, yeah.
Very that. But we're using supersedes now because...
Indeed, indeed.
Synonyms, okay?
Thanks, Urban Dictionary.
But it's... But it's one of those similar situations, because when you looked at that group of people that was there around RuPaul, there were a lot of white people. A lot of them are white gay men. Shout out to Randy and Fenton, who are the founders and creators of World of Wonder, who are the production team behind a lot of the drag content that you see. And I've interviewed them. They're great people, all of that good stuff. But they still white gay men. Right. If they still move through the world as white gay men. And I think that's something important that we should focus on. And then there's a lot of things where I think just in general with Drag Race, it feels sometimes that the show, and maybe Ru specifically, doesn't do enough to support the black queens. There just always seems to be some antagonism, if you will, between Ru and some of the black queens. Shout out to the Vixen. That sometimes just feels ill-placed, maybe, or it feels just I personally sometimes feel as if RuPaul is trying to maintain the fact that he is top bitch in charge. And all these other nakers better watch out. That's what I sometimes feel when I see some of the interactions. It's not always bad. RuPaul does a lot of great, attempts to do a lot of great work in terms of getting a lot of the queens to not allow their inner saboteur to sabotage themselves in the competition and stuff like that. But some of the interactions are just
I feel like we could have done that for 3.5 minutes and very listeners much so. Are like, what the fuck is going on? Okay, this also touches on a piece that's interesting to me, because I did this piece in Variety last year that was interviewing the heads of different networks and talking about what diversity and inclusion looks like at their networks. And that piece included the heads of NBC, of Showtime, of and also AMC Networks and Tubi, which is a streaming network platform. And one of the things that was really illuminating to me in that conversation, in those conversations, was how none of the different network heads had specifics on what their diversity and inclusion looked like. All of them talked about how they wanted it to be this organic piece of their business and how it was something that, they were really committed to. But then when I asked them how they were measuring it, they didn't have an answer. And Gary Levin, who's the president of Showtime Entertainment, then was saying that he considers the network's growing slate of inclusive of content to be inclusive because it's centered on, quote, honest examinations of human behavior with all of its interesting flaws. When you bring in people of color to create and run shows, they insist on representation. He went on to say, our job is to empower them to bring their sensibility, not just to the voice of the show, not just to what you see on screen, but in everything that happens behind the camera. It's definitely a domino effect in the best possible way, end quote. I bring that up because he mentions in that article that they've brought in Lena Waithe, who created The Shy, and Don Cheadle, who did Black Monday, Jesus and Mero, who hosts Jesus and Mero. And there's this idea that, oh, well, we brought in Black people. You guys figure out the hiring part of it, right?
Yeah.
And so that's on the production side. And one, then Black people have to come in and do the work of diversity and inclusion, right? It's then put on the Black and brown, or the however diverse, however the diversity stamps itself in the different individuals. But also then it doesn't talk about the corporate side, right? So if we're talking about Showtime, if we're talking about NBC, whatever it is, you can say, okay, well, the productions have, a Black director and a Black grip and the Black this or whatever, or the Black and brown person. But then on the corporate side, it's still all white executives that are running things, right? And so I say all that to say, when we're looking at someone being in community and whether or not they are a great advocate for said community, RuPaul is kind of an example of that in the way that we look at what that Emmy night looked like, right? All of those folks that went up there, like, yes, you brought in RuPaul to be this representative, to make you guys all this money because Drag Race does so well for them with ratings.
Yeah.
But also you look at RuPaul to then be the person to diversify that space, but clearly is not doing that very well, if they're doing it at all.
I have a question, because you talking made me think about, does RuPaul have that no. responsibility? Like, is it no? Is it fair for us to be putting that responsibility on RuPaul? Because I'm thinking in terms of, like, when you look at the what do you call them, cast people, the contestants on the show each year, each season, I guess I should say, there's a diversity there. There's sure. some black queens. There this current season that's on. Shout out to the widow Vondu. I know she went home. Oh, a spoiler alert! If y'all didn't know that.
Wow! Thanks sorry. For ruining that for me.
Well, you should be watching when it comes on, honey. But
I hope you don't sleep tonight over that.
Anyway, but there's black queens. There's a Persian queen on this particular season. There's been, you know, folks who are Muslim on the show before. There's been a variety of different representations of the LGBTQ community. There's been trans folks, although we're going to get there, on the show before. And so I wonder if that is that a worthy kind of balance. It the producer side of it, the behind the scenes side, at least the people who have the quote unquote power, the people who are actually getting the Emmys being primarily white and the contestants being more diverse.
That's such a good part of the conversation, right? So if you're a person that's decision making, and you have the power on that show to say who comes and who goes, as far as who can be on the cast and who won't be, that is a perfect example of, like, where diversity and inclusion is important, right? And so being able to, like, pick out black and brown queens or trans queens or all the different ways that diversity shows up on Drag Race, being able to include that person on the show is one part of it. But also being able to include those types of people in the decision-making processes is what's also important when you're yeah. when you're deciding who stays and who goes, right? When you're deciding who is going to be making the money for creating these shows, when you're yeah. looking at who's going to be saying yes and no to what other shows are going to be able to get made, because RuPaul's Drag Race, as we said, has become multi-franchised, right? Has become all kinds of different things. So there's more than just, like, the faces, because we can see faces and get representation there, but when we're looking down the line, like, who are the audio people and who are the people who are, you know, producing XYZ challenges? Yeah. Who are the people that are hiring and all of those things? Then, like, this is where the inclusion writer comes in that we've heard so many people talk about, right? Like, I want to make sure that the crew looks like America. I want to make sure that the crew looks like what we have on screen on this show sometimes, because that is the place where it doesn't always come in.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that some of the queens who've actually been on the show did come out after, well, during this whole situation around the Emmys controversy or whatever, and they did say that, you know, a lot of the folks behind the scenes whose names we don't know, who don't get the chance, right, to take the stage at the Emmys are diverse. Now, what does that diversity mean? I don't know, but they did. Some of them did come out and say, and what we do know, one of the things I do love about the show, and I don't know if this is a RuPaul thing or if this is a VH1 thing or what, but, you know, some of the former queens now work on the show doing hair, doing makeup for mm-hmm. RuPaul, or for, you know, they have a new spinoff called Secret Celebrity Drag Race or whatever. Now, we're going to talk about it later, whether these people are actually celebrities or not, but, you know, that's a conversation for a different time.
Listen, okay. More people know them than me, so well, maybe.
Well, but that don't make them celebrity.
I mean,
okay. Anyway,
that's what I always say. You're more famous than me.
But some of the former queens are behind the scenes doing makeup, doing the makeovers for that particular show. So they do put money back into the community and folks who've been, you know, on the show in different ways.
If we're going to talk about RuPaul, AJ and the Queen is the new series on Netflix, the scripted series.
The now canceled series.
Well, there is that. But you can see all of season one right now. but when I tell you, like, one of the worst shows I've ever watched in my life, and I was just really disappointed because, and, like, I generally don't write bad reviews. If I don't like something, I just won't write about it. And I had, like, a commissioned review, and so I was nervous because I had to, like, send a review back to the company and say, like, what I thought about it. And I remember being so disappointed with RuPaul in this series because Aww. It was RuPaul and Michael Patrick King, who did Sex and the City, and what's the other Michael Patrick King show with Lisa Kudrow?
I don't watch white people shows. I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't watch
I know
either,
who Lisa Kudrow is. Ain't that smelly cat woman?
Yes. The Nestle Tollhauser cookie thing. That's the only thing I know from Friends. I never really watched it. But
smelly cat.
Smelly Cat. It's a song, right?
Smelly Cat, what are you? I don't, that's it. I don't know.
We gave you what we had, people. Sorry.
Right.
But like, I was so disappointed with AJ and the Queen. I thought it was such a great opportunity to do something great. And I just thought it was awful. And I only watched the first half, and I have no interest in seeing any more of it.
Well, there it is then. I haven't watched. Don't plan on watching. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to get into one of our last points about Miss RuPaul. And that's this conversation about whether or not she is transphobic. Maybe not.
That's coming up next.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them.
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play.
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies.
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a brand new podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
All right, listeners, in case you don't know, our show is on a network called Maximum Fun. And the best part about Maximum Fun is that it is listener supported. Similar to, you know, public radio, we get all of our support from you and the little bit of ads that you hear every now and again on the show. But we need your help in getting more information so that we can, you know, get us a little bit more coin. Max Fun is running a survey to help us all figure out the demographics of our listeners so that we can figure out the advertisers that you might be most interested in.
Results of this survey are going to help us really be able to talk to new advertisers and convince them to give Maximum Fun shows like Fanti a shot. The survey is short. It shouldn't take more than 10 minutes, and you'll get a discount at the Max Fun store for filling it out. And also all of our gratitude. To fill out the survey, yes, go to MaximumFun.org/ad survey to fill it out. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/ad survey. Welcome back to Fanti. So we're talking about RuPaul. And one of the interesting things that happened here in the last couple of years was this question of transphobia. And there was a story in Vox that the headline says, how RuPaul's comments on trans women led to a drag race revolt and a rare apology. Travel, dive in.
Are you singling me out?
No, I was just going to let you take it here.
Okay, so here's the thing. This whole situation, I think it has deep roots in the drag race kind of history, if you will. A lot of it initially started with, you know, there was a game on RuPaul's Drag Race in which the contestants, I believe they had to decide, they were shown like parts of pictures of people's bodies, and they had to decide if that person was a man or if that person was something else.
What could go wrong?
Listen, okay? And there was a lot of conversation around the T word, which for the sake of conversation is tranny in this situation. And then around that same time, there was also conversations about she-male. Now, for the old school Drag Race fans, you'll know this. Right before RuPaul walks into the workroom, there used to be a sound that played that went, you've...
kind of thing. It was a laugh and a zoom and a right.
And then it said, you've got shemale.
Yes.
Or something like that, right? And so around all of this situation, both that kind of game, the T-word game that they were playing, as well as the shemale sound, it became an issue for a lot of fans. This is as the show is kind of gaining more attention from folks, and the audience is getting bigger and bigger. And so the show responded by taking out the she-male sound, so you no longer hear it. It's not in the seasons now anymore.
And the graphic.
And then I believe they made a formal apology about the game. It wasn't, you know, like, I'm sorry, but it was definitely like, okay, we're learning, blah-de-blah-blah-blah-blah. Fast forward a few years, And there begins a lot of conversation around whether trans women have a place on Drag Race. And so this, I think it's accurate to say this started around the time of Peppermint being a contestant. Peppermint is a apparently legendary drag queen in the New York area, and she competed on the show. Now, apparently, I think it's unclear, maybe you know this, I think it's unclear whether or not Peppermint had disclosed being a trans person while a contestant on the show, but definitely by the show's end, she let the world know that, you know, she's not just trans. Doing female impersonation, but she is a woman as well.
Right, so so looking at this from the tweets and the story on Vox, they talked about Peppermint, who, first of all, I adore Peppermint.
Legend.
If you've ever met Peppermint, she's sweet as pie, and I love Peppermint. And apparently, when this whole situation was happening, Peppermint got on Twitter and just tweeted four emojis. One was like one version of a sad face, another version of a sad face, a third version of a sad face, and then the zipped mouth with an exclamation point. Rue then came out the next day and tweeted the following. You can take performance-enhancing drugs and still be an athlete, just not in the Olympics.
Which?
Yikes, woo, right? This was March 5th, 2018. And it was challenging to hear that, right? And so at the very least, if we're gonna say it nicely.
And we should say why it's challenging, right? I personally want to be clear about why this equation of medically transitioning hormones, in this case estrogen, for trans women, and equating that with folks taking steroids,
performance-enhancing drugs, yeah.
Taking steroids for, you know, to give them a better advantage at, you know, the game that they're playing. There's one, a problem in that equation. And then even beyond that, the comment that Rue makes really kind of erases the history of trans women having, you know, a very integral role in the performance and the art of drag. Anyway, like, even outside of the problematic nature of it, there's a lot of, like, erasure or, like, rewriting that's going on. And so RuPaul's point in saying that was, like, you know, he does not feel, at least at that time, did not feel like trans women had a place on Drag Race because he felt as if it would change what they were trying to do there.
Well, and I think also part of this that's interesting is there... So I told you guys, like, if you're new to the show, I've had a million different jobs. And when I first moved to LA, in the same week, I got a job working at America's Next Top Model, and I got a job as a bouncer at a nightclub, a gay club here in LA. Shut up, Travel.
Bouncer?
I'm a 6'3" black man. It's an easy resume. And so,
okay, yeah, but you, okay.
Hold on. Wait a minute, bitch. Don't get cute. But anyway, so the club that I worked at, though, they had drag shows very often.
What club did you work at?
It was called MJ's in Silver Lake. This was 2011, 2012-ish. And then that was before I started working on the new Ricky Lake show, which, whole other conversation. But I didn't know that there was, like, a bit of tension between trans women and the drag community. And I had kind of learned that because we would have nights that were dedicated to trans drag, but they were the women that were participating back at that time were not received as well by the male drag queens that performed on other nights, and like they had to have them on different nights, and I didn't know that that was a thing until then.
Yeah, I think ultimately it gets to this idea of people. When I say people, I mean John Q. Public conflating trans identity with drag queens, which is something, which is, you know, a conflation that has happened, you know, for eons, right, at this point. And, like, people mistaking trans folks for being, you know, quote-unquote cross-dressers, etc. So, like, there's just a lot of miseducation, that I think contributes to that.
Can we pause there? Because I think for anyone that's listening, like, there is an important distinction there, right? Being a drag performer is someone that dresses in costume for the sake of entertainment and financial gain, right?
It's a job. Yes.
It's a job, right? Someone who is transgender is a person who
lives their life and walks the street as who they say they are. Exactly. Right. They're not, it's not for deception. It's not for a game. It's not for gain either. It's just, you know, they're living their life in the way that they feel that they were supposed to be living it all along.
And then there is like cross dressing, which is I don't even know if we even still use that term technically. Someone who decides to kind of play. And I don't even know that it's really gender nonconforming.
It's not gender nonconforming. I think the simplest way that some people will say it is like some folks cross dress, meaning they are a person who was assigned male at birth and identify as a man, but they enjoy perhaps putting on quote unquote women's clothing for a variety of reasons. That's what we would consider quote unquote cross dressing. But again, yes, we don't really use that term like that much anymore.
Right.
And so, but yeah, it's like, there's a lot of like historical rifts in the community that I think rose to kind of visibility during this conversation as people were talking about Drag Race.
And, can I also insert here that these things exist kind of in spectrum as well? And we had this conversation about trans identity and how we had this conversation, I believe, when we were on the radio. I feel like we spend so much goddamn time talking to each other.
You love me so much.
Or something. I don't know if it was on this show or on another show, but we talked about trans athletes in the Olympics and things like that. And like, even if we're talking about cross-dressing, right? Caitlyn Jenner is someone who, you know, has talked about prior to transition, when Caitlyn identified as Bruce, had talked about, you know, cross-dressing for a period in private and, you know, sometimes going out into hotels before identifying as trans and coming out with that identity. And that was something that, you know, I think some people are like, oh, well, if you're cross-dressing, does that mean you're gay or does that mean that you are trans? Like, there are all kinds of different places that people land on the spectrum, and oftentimes they move on said spectrum.
Yeah, and I do just want to say for, you know, the folks who just aren't, I mean, I feel like this has become, you know, a very special episode of what's this podcast called? Fanti.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I think I'll just say this. The term cross-dressing is a term that, like, a lot of older folks still use because it is a term that was more popularized then. And so when Caitlyn, prior to identifying as Caitlyn, was talking with Diane Sawyer, she used a lot of the cross-dressing type of terminology because that's, you know, what folks of her generation will know and connect to. But ultimately, I think when it comes down to this conversation with RuPaul that we're having is people thought that those comments that Ru made were like, they weren't in the spirit of Drag Race. They weren't in the spirit of acceptance and community. And they felt as if it was just like supremely problematic. And then I do want to shout out Miss Gia Gunn, who is a former Drag Race contestant. She actually she transitioned after the competition, after her first time on the competition, but she was a contestant on Drag Race All Stars, and she officially technically was the first trans woman in terms of like official title to compete on the show. And she's, you know, there's a video of her on Twitter right now that, you know, people replay over of her saying something to the effect of like, fuck Miss RuPaul or something like that. And so she's talked a lot about feeling like she as a trans woman was brought on All Stars to clean up RuPaul's mess that he created during this whole situation. And so, you know, the question is RuPaul transphobic? Is the show transphobic?
Is RuPaul anti-black? Is RuPaul fracking? Like, there's a lot of questions, yeah.
There's a lot of questions, but the show is cute, okay? And I really enjoy the show.
I have a friend who really is frustrated with RuPaul to the level of saying, I don't like RuPaul. However, they love the show. right? Yeah. And he loves the show and watches the show to support the queens, but does not like RuPaul in a very fancy kind of way. And like is unsure how he feels about even watching the show because it you know, gives big up to RuPaul. It gives RuPaul and that whole empire ratings.
And it allows RuPaul to continue building on what RuPaul is building on, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it allows RuPaul to still make the coins, unfortunately, right? It allows RuPaul to still make the coins that RuPaul is making while also, you know, having this 60,000 acres in Wyoming and selling it to whomever he's selling it to make money off there. And so it's like that tough, like, for some reason, the word dichotomy is in my head. I know that's not the right word.
It's a conundrum.
Conundrum. I like that.
Hey.
Consternation for those who listened to last week's episode.
You know what? Fuck you.
As we wrap up this week's episode, we always want to acknowledge some of the feedback that you all have given us.
Before we do that, I fucked up and I dead named Caitlyn Jenner. And I wanted to say, like, I didn't do that the way that I should have. And because I used the old name. Even in service of like recognizing that the time I was talking about was pre-transition for Caitlyn, but right. I should not have used the name. So I'm an asshole for that. And I apologize.
It's all right. It's not all right, but we are all growing wow. and we are all learning. They can use you as an example of what not to do. And they can use me as an example.
God
of what
damn.
To do.
Wow. Thank you for standing by your sister.
That is what I'm here to do. We hold you accountable, my love.
No, yeah, I didn't do that correctly, so don't do what I did there.
That's all right. We're going to get into feedback. As always, you all can reach out to us at Fanti Podcast on the Instagrams and on the Twitters. I want to shout out somebody who gave us a little bit of feedback on our Proud to Be an American series. We should also say that series, it's ongoing. You will see it pop back up. So stay tuned for what's coming. And so this tweet comes from Brad. Their Twitter handle is @BOLVERKGTM. Seems like just a combination of letters that you put together, but shout out to you. And Brad had to say, I want to answer the question if I'm proud to be an American. As a queer white dude, I am proud to be an American, but I am disgusted with my race in general because they are the cause of the struggles that minorities have to deal with. It's easy for white people to say, oh, we're getting more progressive, we're more open and more accepting, but nah. I'm wondering how how Brad says nah. Anyway,
because I'm thinking to myself like, huh, is it nah or nah? Or
I hate you so much. Anyway,
love you,
he
Brad.
Says as long yeah right yes we do love you Brad. As long as we're dominated by white conservative Republicans, we still have a long fucking way to go on progression. And I want to shout that out because we've actually had some white folks let us know via emails. You all know who you are. Some other suggestions for potential episodes of the series. And you know, I don't know for those people who wrote to us if we're gonna do an episode interviewing white folks about whether
exactly
or not they're proud
sure.
to be an American.
Well, so to that point, while you were reading those tweets, I was trying to find this email that Laura had forwarded over to us. This email, first of all, probably a contender for best first line of an email ever. It begins off with, "Hello, Fanti. Just a thought, and feel free to tell my white ass to keep quiet." First of all, hilarious. It says, "I was thinking it may be interesting as part of this Proud to Be an American series to interview an anti-racist white American. I'm not interested in recentering white people, holla to that, but white people and all people benefit from white role models who let them know that they need to be part of the equity solution. Too often, white people think it's enough to not be racist when the goal has to be anti-racism." And he goes on, first of all, I was kind of surprised by your letter here, Judd. It goes on to say, "I'm very much enjoying the series and already strategizing how to use these podcasts in my summer class of sociolinguistics and next fall in analysis of teaching. I've already had one student use your podcast in research review looking at how high school English teachers approach the art versus the artist conversation with students." The fact that people are using Fanti in classrooms, I mean, really the reason that we started the show, right?
Well, I don't know about you, but I have a master's degree, so you
Listen,
can very much
I,
cite me.
I'm not coming for... I just love that they're using it in school, but I do like this idea I do hear the idea of, you know, talking with an anti-racist white person who does work in anti-racism, because I think that all white people need to understand that the most offensive thing you can do is call a white person racist, right? But like, for a white person to not be racist would be such an extraordinarily unusual arrival, right? Because Jane Elliott talks about this really well, but she was like, our country conditions
white people. Jane Elliott is that bitch.
She is that bitch. And if we're going to have anybody, it'd be her. But she's really great about kind of demonstrating how, for white people, if you grow up and are not racist, you are some extraordinary unicorn, because everything about the way that we are trained, conditioned, taught, all of those different things teaches you to be racist. And it's not about like, oh, you have some fucked up ideas that you just came up with. It's more about like, you have been taught and trained to be anti-Black in ways that Black and brown people are also trained to be anti-Black and brown.
Very much so. Also, shout out to the person who, you know, on this line of white people, who suggested that we interview a Jewish white person, because the Jewish experience is it complicates the lived experience. Keep an eye out for that series. It will continue. We are in the process of percolating and coming up with ideas and interviewing different guests, so you will definitely see it pop back up. As always, we want to thank you all for listening. Be sure to check us out on the iTunes. Give us a 5-star review if you please, and tell all of your peoples, while they are cooped up in the house for the corona, that they should be listening to the Fanti. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show or any show, tweet at us at Fanti Podcast, or follow us on the Instas at Fanti Podcast as well. And as always, you can email us at Fanti@MaximumFun.org.
We want to thank the composer of our music, Corice. You can find him wherever you find Slayworthy Audio. That is Corice. And Ashley Nguyen, who does our beautiful photo and all of the cool graphics that you've seen in our videos on the social media. Our producers this week are Laura Swisher and Jordan Cowling. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
I hate how you always do, "This is a production of Maximum Fun."
You know, there was, when I was a kid, there was a radio station, and they always would say their name, and they would go, "The Sports Leader." And it was ridiculous.
That's exactly how you do it. But yeah. Like a radio person.
Well, sweetie, anyway, you can only be who you are. This is a production of Maximum Fun.